10 years ago this week, the Denali Fault earthquake shook interior Alaska. On November 3, 2002, the 7.9 magnitude quake caused extensive damage to infrastructure along the fault line, including bridges, roads, and even an airport. Scientists and engineers have spent the last decade studying the intricacies of the earthquake, hoping to learn how to prevent damage from future earthquakes. Peter Heusler, a geologist with USGS in Anchorage, is one of those scientists. He says the Denali earthquake was a strike-slip earthquake.
The motion is kind of side to side. So if I was standing on one side of the fault and let's say you were standing on the other side of the fault, after the earthquake is over, then you would move laterally. You'll end up to one side or the other. In the case of the Denali Fault earthquake, the maximum motion was about 8.8 meters or around 30 feet. And so you would have ended up almost 30 feet off to my right after the earthquake if we'd been standing in this high slip area, which was kind of near Mentasta.
That seems like a lot. Is it?
It is, yeah. I mean, there's plenty of smaller earthquakes that do a lot of damage with only 1 or 2 meters of slip, you know, say 3 feet, 6 feet, something like that. But yeah, that was a huge amount.
Why have researchers been so interested in this particular earthquake?
In part, it's just that although these strike-slip earthquakes are important, for example, maybe the best known is the 1906 earthquake in San Francisco that caused all the fires, or even the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake in California that happened during the World Series. Those are sort of two well-known strike-slip earthquakes. Ones of magnitude 7.8 or larger are really quite rare, and in the last century there was only about a half dozen of those. And it's really only been since the Cold War that our instrumentation of earthquakes and at one level our knowledge of earthquakes has increased quite a bit. And so to be able to study an earthquake like this in kind of our modern age of technology is really an important thing.
What would you say the biggest lessons that have been learned after that quake are?
Well, it's hard to know if there's one, but there was certainly a lot of successes. I think some of the lessons that were learned are we don't know everything. As we talked about, we didn't know about this one fault before the earthquake started. I think another huge success of this earthquake was the engineering of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline across the Denali Fault System. This was the first time that a man-made structure designed to straddle an active fault that could be moving had really been tested. And the pipeline did not rupture during the earthquake, even though that at the pipeline crossing, there was about 16 feet of lateral motion right there. And that's really a remarkable thing. In 1973, there was a group of earthquake geologists that went and tried to characterize the Denali Fault at that time within that area. They tried to say, okay, within this particular zone, we need to engineer for fault slippage. They came up with an estimate of about how much the fault might move in that area. And they got it pretty much right. And this earthquake was really a testament to the success of that. And I think this gets into a larger issue, which is that sometimes I think people are a little hesitant to put money into things like earthquake safety. Oh, it's, you know, another 2% or 5% of the budget of this building. But the reality was, is that, you know, in the case of the pipeline, it was still working afterwards. There was a little bit of downtime for the pipeline, but basically the oil could keep flowing. If you invest a little bit into your own buildings and infrastructure, often after earthquakes, they can still be usable. And you didn't merely just survive the earthquake in that building.
How has the earthquake improved the understanding of how infrastructure responds on frozen ground? Is there lessons to be learned beyond what you just talked about with the TAPS line there?
Yes, there is. There's been some work done on bridges by a professor here at UAA, and he found that their response in earthquakes is actually quite different during the winter months when the ground is frozen versus in the summer months when the ground can move around a bit more. And I'm not an engineer, but the lesson I take away from that is you need to be really careful about how you're building these structures and not only think of one season of the year when you're doing it.
Well, I am going to ask you the question that I'm sure all geologists hate to have to field, but is the region due for another similar type earthquake anytime soon?
Well, I think at one level we don't know, and at another level we do know. And at this time, we're not able to predict earthquakes within a month or a year, or, you know, an hour or a second. I think really the good thing is, though, that we are doing a much better job of being able to predict ground motions associated with an earthquake. And what that matters for you in your everyday life is that we can build buildings that are survivable. Usually it's not earthquakes that kill people, it's buildings that kill people, that buildings collapse and fall on them. And if modern building codes are actually applied to construction, which is actually fairly uneven across Alaska, then structures can be built much better to withstand them.
Peter Heusler is a geologist with USGS based in Anchorage.